This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Tyke. It's great to have you with us on this Wednesday. Last week on the show, we spoke with the author of A History of America's Eastern Forests about the natural and man-made challenges that have shaped them over the centuries. The U.S. Forest Service manages tens of millions of acres of forest land across the country for the benefit of many stakeholders and for many purposes: commercial logging, recreation, and even wilderness preservation. The National Forest System is divided into nine regions. One of the most geographically diverse is Region 9, which runs from the Missouri River to the Atlantic Ocean. The region is headquartered here in Milwaukee and overseen by the regional forester, a position just filled by Kathleen Atkinson. She joins us in the studio to give us an on-the-ground sense of what the forests face today. Welcome to Lake Effect.
Thank you.
I want to start with the impact of the sequester on national forests, and as simply as this question: how are national forests being affected by it?
Well, right now we are in the process of getting our budget for this year, so we'll know better in the coming weeks. What we're doing to prepare ourselves, what we have been doing, is looking for cost efficiencies. Obviously, we're always trying to use the taxpayers' dollars wisely, but we've been looking for ways that we can streamline some costs and save money to hopefully reduce any impacts from the sequestration.
There were some much publicized impacts in the national park system. We've heard about parks with reduced operating hours or reduced amenities and such. That has not been the case yet at this point for the National Forest System?
Not yet. We're, again, there may be some impacts with some reduced hours, but we're really looking to try to find some other ways to absorb those impacts.
Of course, one of the stakeholders involved in the national forests are timber companies and timber interests. Is the impact on the national forests of tight budget climates, is it going to put more pressure on the revenue generating side of the equation?
I don't think so. And I really am kind of also excited to see our shift in how we work with our wide range of publics. We're really, over the past couple years, have really been looking at a much more collaborative approach in working with the publics. And it's really exciting because that also kind of lends itself to developing more partnerships, which helps leverage our dollars also.
This is something that the Forest Service has been sensitive to in the past, is the criticism that it's managing the forests for the benefit of some stakeholders versus others.
Right. And again, I think by sort of approaching management on a more holistic basis, looking at a watershed versus just one resource area, it really allows us to draw in that wide range of public and get their thoughts and ideas on management.
We should point out that you are the regional forester. That means you are essentially overseeing Region 9 of the Forest Service, which is a pretty vast space. Describe what this region is and how – well, let's start there. I mean, Region 9 is based in Milwaukee. We do not have a national forest in Milwaukee, but where does it stretch?
It is a very large region. It goes from Minnesota to Maine to West Virginia to Missouri. Covers 20 states. That's 43% of the nation's population, 17 national forests, and one prairie.
So are there primary issues that face the region as a whole? I mean, are there commonalities within, you know, national forests in Missouri versus New Hampshire versus Minnesota?
I would say couple ones spring to mind. One is forest health and keeping our forests healthy in the midst of a changing climate and preparing them for the future climate that might be slightly different than what we have right now. And also invasive species. We have a significant problem with invasive species, whether that's insects, plants, mussels in the Great Lakes. It's a wide range.
Well, and in fact, let's stick with invasive species for a moment, because there is a lot of attention paid in this particular state to the emerald ash borer, and in places like Michigan as well. And I guess recently there was the news that the emerald ash borer has been found in even New Hampshire. This seems to be one of those issues that knows no borders. What is the Forest Service's role within the overall effort to either stem or control the spread of EAB?
One of the interesting things about forests in the eastern region is we do not have a solid ownership pattern, meaning within a proclaimed national forest boundary, it's not all federally owned land. Usually it's about half the land within the boundary is federally owned, and the other half is private. So we have to work closely with the private landholders, both to manage forests, to manage within the national forests, but also, like you say, it's really an all lands approach. So the Forest Service has several other branches, one which is state and private and one which is research, all of which have to work together to address issues such as these.
Are you feeling good about where that coordination is at this point? Obviously, the EAB has continued to spread at this stage.
Right. I feel good about how we're working with the private landowners and with the state forestry organizations. Issues like this are very difficult because they don't have a natural predator here, and so really we're in a mode of trying to contain.
There was the news out just recently that carbon dioxide levels in the atmosphere are at record high levels. You talked about the need to manage forests for future changes in climate. What does that mean? What is making a healthy forest today have to do with the climate that might exist 10 years from now?
Well, when you're talking about managing a forest, trees grow slowly, and it's a long-term investment. And so if you're thinking about maybe you're doing some reforestation in an area, you know, you need to be thinking about the next 80 years. Will the climate be the same? You know, are species going to move on the landscape? Are plants and animals going to move? And so we have to be thinking ahead and not just sort of replicating what was there at the current time.
I know one of the issues out west is when you get into forest health actually involves forest restoration, taking down trees to improve the health of the forest. Is that an issue in the eastern region? Are there forests that are unhealthy because they have been allowed to essentially grow unabated for so long?
I think one of the unique challenges in the east is because we acquired the lands because they were degraded. And so we set about doing restoration many, many years ago. But what that means in many cases is the trees are all roughly the same age. And so a healthy forest would involve a lot of different ages of trees. And so that's something that we're looking at and considering as we do management.
Your background seems perfect for this role. You've worked in recreation, in timber management, as a district ranger, as a silviculturalist. Is there one area in forest work that you feel like you connect with the best?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I have worked in a lot of geographic areas and with a lot of resource areas. And to me, that's one of the fun things about working for the Forest Service is I've gotten to live all over, meet all kinds of people, and do vastly different jobs. And I've enjoyed that immensely.
I mean, I imagine no one necessarily goes into forestry because they especially enjoy working with budgets.
Well, I don't know about that.
I'm not saying you don't enjoy working with budgets, but I'm asking you to think back when you first entered the field. What was it about the field that connected with you in the first place?
So I grew up on a small farm in southwestern Michigan, and I used to love to go out with my father, and he would graft black walnut trees and make some very bad maple syrup. And so I really enjoyed just being outside, and that's what prompted me to go into forestry. So for me, it was a love of the resources.
Before you came out to Region 9, you went to work every day in Washington, D.C. Now your office is in downtown Milwaukee. Both cities have their fair amount of trees, but obviously neither is in the midst of a national forest. If you are someone who lives in urban America, how do you think our national forest system should touch your life?
That is a wonderful question. And so we have a program called Urban Connections, where we have individuals in some major cities, Detroit, Boston. And it's really important that we make a connection to urban youth and urban people in general to the land. And so that's a strong area of focus. And what we want to do is get people to really appreciate the national forest, that that they own and get to use.
So the idea is that connecting people to the land here makes them more interested, more invested in, more willing to go to the national forests beyond that?
We want to help people understand nature in general and the importance of the natural environment. And sure, we'd love to have them come out to the national forests. But if it also means that they become interested in small urban forests, that's wonderful too. We just want to connect people to nature.
We talked about how you originally got connected to nature. Even after all of these years doing it, what still gets you the most fired up about working in forestry?
When I get to go out to a natural environment, a national forest, and talk to people that are there and enjoying it, that just makes me feel so good. And it makes me feel very proud of what we're doing as the Forest Service.
Do you think there's an untold story about national forests that people don't appreciate?
I think so. Many people don't understand or know the difference between a national forest and a national park or a state forest. And I don't know that necessarily that distinction is important. Again, what is important is that they understand nature and that they appreciate it.
Not long ago, I chatted with the author of a book on the history of America's eastern forests. And one of the issues he was talking about that faces some, especially in the Northeast and in places like North Carolina, is rapid development in the areas surrounding national forests. Are those issues that the national forests themselves and the Forest Service can do something about, or is this another one of those cases where you really have to wait to see what happens outside and then deal with the after effects of, you know, a state's decision or a municipality's decision?
That's a difficult one, especially for the Eastern National Forest, because with our fragmented land ownership pattern, when people develop their private land, oftentimes that means they have a need for utilities that would cross national forest to get to their private land, driveways, roads. And all these things obviously have impacts on the environment. So it's really important for us to work with the local communities to try to minimize that. And, you know, because it's one thing if it's one house in the middle of surrounded by national forest. It's another thing if it's a highly developed subdivision.
Is there a single greatest challenge that you see as you look across the eastern region right now that the Forest Service has to deal with?
I think the greatest challenge I see is making that connection, again, with our population just increasingly urban, is making that connection and having people appreciate their national forest.
Well, I mean, I guess the other question I had for you is, you know, in years past, there has been this kind of push-pull between when it comes to wilderness management. I know in the Monongahela National Forest in West Virginia, wilderness is a huge part of the equation, as it is in the Boundary Waters Canoe Area wilderness. Where is wilderness at this stage of the game? Are there other similar situations in national forests in the East where wilderness might play a larger role?
Well, you know, you recently had a guest on that talked about once you label an area and, you know, as wilderness, that it attracts a lot more attention. And that's something we've seen in the Forest Service too, because we have a lot of areas which are fairly remote, have a lot of the characteristics, but are not necessarily labeled as wilderness. But right now, we have not seen a big push to do a lot of designation of additional areas.
Are there other aspects to what you do as the regional forester that you think people ought to know about?
Again, I would just kind of go back to making the connection of people to the landscape. And we do a lot of work with youth and going into schools and talking to folks. And I know it used to be more of a Smokey Bear message about fire, but I'm really excited to see us really working with schools and with nonprofit groups to really reach out to young people and bring them out to the forest and bring them out to other forested landscapes and have them just understand and appreciate the beauty of nature.
You wouldn't say that Smokey Bear is outdated, though.
Oh, of course not.
Smokey Bear perhaps ought to have a sidekick who can talk about the other recreational aspects of the forest.
Well, that's true. But Smokey still has an important message. And and children love him, too.
Kathleen Atkinson, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Kathleen Atkinson is the regional forester for Region 9, or the eastern region of the U.S. Forest Service, which includes Wisconsin. Its western border runs from Minnesota south to Missouri, and on the eastern side, it goes from Maine to Maryland. The news that a high genetic risk for breast cancer led Angelina Jolie to undergo a double mastectomy is shining a light on philosophical and ethical questions about genes. We'll dig in a little deeper when Lake Effect continues on WUWM.